Hey, Marvel Maniacs, welcome to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 175. We're recording this on Monday, August 2nd, 2021. Just a reminder, Guardians of the MCU is part of the Random Chatter Network. Please do check us out at randomchatter.com for information on all of our shows. Membership through Patreon, access to the Escape Hatch Discord channel, and show merchandise from TeePublic. We have a very special episode. Very special. With a returning guest, it's Brianna. Hi, Brianna.
Oh, hello.
How are you this evening?
Happy to be here.
We're very happy to have you. So joining me tonight is Sheba. Lizzie couldn't make it because she's jet lagged. And John maybe
Shame,
might
Lizzie.
Show up.
Shame.
John might show up.
I mean,
up.
I get it. I get it. But I miss you, so I have to shame you.
and she did send her regards. She did send her regards.
How very ominous.
Yes. So folks, Brianna Darnell now, and congratulations on getting married, which is you weren't
Thank
last
you.
Time we had you on the show like a year and a half ago or something. It was before the pandemic, so it was,
yeah.
It might as well have been 10 years ago. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It was like that.
Yeah.
I'm literally a different person.
Yeah. You've gotten married. You've relocated. You've become, actually over the last few days, very internet famous.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Congratulations.
I love the irony of that.
So,
I love it. Like right when I am not caring about being influencer or Instagram famous or the numbers, and then it happens. I'm like, yeah. Life is silly.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like that's what everybody says. They're like, they just kind of stopped caring, and then all of a sudden, bam! And they're like, what? What? Why? Why is it like that? But
yeah,
okay. What it is, I guess.
It's good. It's nice because I used to. No, I didn't. I don't think I obsessed about it, but I was definitely very much into it because I was trying to make the Lady Nerd my business and become a geek fashion or cosplay influencer. That word. But because I thought I had a good shot, but in the end, I did not have the resources or the privilege to make that happen. So I'm still the Lady Nerd. I'm still around. But now it's just my nomenclature, it's just my nom de plume and not my identity.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That's all right. So let's see, when we had you on, however long ago it was, we I think most notably spoke about the fact that you had been a stand-in on a number of different Marvel productions for different people, different characters, doing different things. You gave us some terrific stories that came from that. And we're really glad that you're joining us again because you did the same thing for Loki, which is, it's amazing that people are still talking about, even though, like, you know, it's amazing how, like, humanity has such a short memory span now, and Loki has been gone now for like 3 weeks and people are still talking about it, which is so cool.
It's been only 3 weeks? Why does it feel like it's been forever ago?
Or yesterday. It's everything's a blur
time
now.
Time works differently in the TVA.
Very much so. So let's see. We did actually just yesterday morning spoke with Sarah Irwin, who was kind of like, so like you and Sarah and Sophia were like kind of each part of this character, which is like so cool.
It's still these.
Now you just got to help me get Sophia on the show. Then we'll have all three of you.
About the trifecta.
Sophie trifecta.
Yes, exactly. So, it was great talking to Sarah kind of about those aspects of the stunt work and such. But you also you've shared a lot of stuff on Instagram as the series kind of started to roll out like episodically you were like, oh, hey, I remember in this episode this happened or I did this.
Yeah, I always try to stay like two episodes behind for spoilers.
Yep.
Also, because even though I'm not working for Marvel anymore, I wanted to stay in Marvel's good graces.
Yes, there is absolutely nothing wrong with maintaining that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to spoil it for people watching the show.
So I think really the best way to approach this, and having had you on the show before and knowing that you have all sorts of stuff, I almost kind of feel that we're best off just like letting you do your thing. Just go. Just tell us fun and exciting things. And then Sheba and I will just kind of jump in there once in a while and say, oh, my gosh, what do you mean? Tell us more about this.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you quantified that, because if you were going to go with just do your thing, I'm like, cool, I'm going to stand here, I'm going to stare just off camera until you tell me to move. Because that's what a stand-in does.
Yeah. I imagine there was a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I'll actually start with that for your listeners, because I had a lot of people that were confused on what the heck is a stand-in.
Mm-hmm.
And many apologies to Sarah on I've seen a few articles recently that have tried to credit me as the stunt double, and I'm like, no, that's Sarah. I am not that badass. I am not that cool. She does all the hard work and the dangerous stuff. I just stand there and look pretty or something. But yeah, so a stand-in literally stands in. We are matched to an actor. Generally speaking, depending on how picky the director of photography is, same or similar height, skin tone, eye color, hair color. You want to be a double, because mm-hmm. usually stand-ins will also be the photo doubles. Sure. That was really sad. Sure. That this show was one of the only shows that I've been on. Actually, it was the only show that I've worked full-time on and didn't photo double. And I was so upset. I wanted to wear that suit so bad.
Oh, you didn't get to wear the suit?
No.
Oh, that's
nothing.
A bummer.
Bummer.
Oh, I was so sad.
Oh.
But, you know, there was a lot of stuff from the COVID requirements. I'm sure kept apart. And, you know, Sarah was already in the costume doing the stunt, so there was no reason to then have me in it and it be redundant. So
right.
I'll just sigh. But anyway, I digress. So you get matched to an actor in look, and then you're kind of a pre-actor. So setups with lights and camera can take anywhere from 15 minutes to 4 hours, depending on the complexity of the scene. And so to keep the actor fresh and not wear them out, because you're just standing there. Or you might be running over and over and over again while the Steadicam is trying to figure out their pacing. So you have a stand-in.
Sure.
So that is our glamorous job.
Cool. And cool. Kind of the edification of our listeners also, can you just kind of run through like what things you've done prior to Loki, in terms of like what productions, what characters, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. The biggest one before this that I worked on was, The Gifted. I was Polaris, Emma DeMont stand-in, for 2 seasons. It was so much fun, and I miss her very, very much. I also
and you
worked
look
on the
amazingly
first...
like her, by the way. Like seriously, like that is a spot on like choice that they made, putting the two
we
of you next
are similar
to each
types.
Other. Yeah,
I appreciate that. I think Emma's one of the most beautiful humans I've ever seen, and I am not exaggerating. So if I look anything like her, I will take that compliment. Let's see. I also worked on the first season of MacGyver. I was Sandrine Holt's stand-in. That was actually my first real stand-in gig.
Cool.
I did not know what the heck I was doing for the first few weeks, which is now really funny to look back on. things that I didn't know what to do. Like the very first day, very first shot that I come in, baby stand-in Brianna doesn't know what she's doing. And our lead actor, Lucas Till, decided to switch with his stand-in and starts rehearsing the scene with me. Except I didn't know that, you know, you should have your sides with you at all times. And if you're a good stand-in, you should have the lines memorized because actors will sometimes just come up and start doing the scene.
Sure.
And of course, the very first thing Lucas does is takes me by the shoulders and like air kisses both sides of my face, which favorite Brianna is now stunned. Like, what is happening? And I'm like, is this, oh, he's now doing the lines. This is part of the scene, except I didn't know that I was supposed to have the lines memorized. So I'm just trying to improv, which I'm like, no, don't do that.
Oh, no.
Now, on that note, what made Loki a little different that was both good and frustrating was that unlike pretty much every other show that I've worked on, where you have the daily side, so you know what in the world is going on, so you can do, I don't know, your job. on bigger Marvel productions, no, stand-ins do not get sides, since they're very, very protective of the story. And sure. I get it. I don't necessarily get it from the perspective of the full-time stand-ins that are vetted for the entire show.
Right.
But on the flip side, I get to watch the show and be surprised, especially because I'm half deaf, so I couldn't hear half of what they were saying anyway.
Sure.
So sometimes my husband would be like, oh, you know, what's, I have no idea what's going on in this scene right now. I can tell you where I was standing.
How does that, because you were saying the being hard of hearing and stuff, does that cause a lot of difficulty when you're being a stand-in and stuff? Just generally?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And how would you get around it? Or how did the crew work with you to kind of make it accessible for you?
I was really lucky on the shows that I got to work on full-time. I had some of the best crews to work with on MacGyver, on Valor, 24 Legacy, The Gifted, Loki. They were always looking out for me. In fact, I'll never forget one of the days on The Gifted, we had a second unit shooting and one camera operator was getting snippy with me because he didn't know me and thought that I wasn't paying attention, even though I was on my mark and I was staring ahead because he was on my deaf side and he wasn't in my line of sight, so I couldn't read his lips. And I hadn't gotten hearing aids yet. Because at that time, the particular type of hearing aids that I used I think they either didn't exist or I didn't know about them, or both, one of the two. Since I use a very specialized hearing aid. And I remember that camera operator got really frustrated and started mouthing off about those stand-ins. And I'll never forget our first unit crew happened to be passing through by lunch and somebody overheard it and knew they were talking about me and like ripped them a new one. our lovely executive producer, Derek Hoffman and, on The Gifted, really helped make that a really amazing environment for stand-ins. And I've been on plenty of shows where stand-ins are treated terribly. And they were so good to us. And the same thing with actually every Marvel movie and TV show that I've worked on has been amazing. There's a reason I've worked on 9 projects and I keep giving back because they're amazing to their crews, and the crews are all, there's such a great camaraderie there of folks that have, you know, you'll see the crew jackets and the crew t-shirts where some of them have been here since Iron Man 1.
That's amazing.
Avengers. And so like, they've been here for years and it's, you know, you're in the trenches together for days and days and months, and it's a family.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Very goofy family. They're all
nerdy
nerds.
Family, probably. So yeah, I was gonna say.
Oh my god, especially on Loki. So many nerds.
I love it.
So yeah, let's jump into Loki. And I'll also mention that John did make it. Hi, John. He's probably swearing at me because it's going to take him a moment to get off mute.
No, I had to click one button. I've been listening.
Hi, attentively. John.
Hi, Brian. And what would happen, as you knew happen, is, you know, you guys are having a great conversation, so I don't want to interrupt. I'm just sitting here enjoying a beverage, having a fun time. I'm listening to a podcast live. That's kind of what I figure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or there you go. So, yeah, Brianna, have at it. Regale us with stories of the Loki.
Oh, there's so many. I'm gonna need some sort of direction.
I think Tim mentioned this, or somebody mentioned it, that you, because you did cause. And Tom Hiddleston mentioned your cosplay. You can start there because I wanted to hear about that story.
Okay. So actually this ties right back into what we were talking about there being a bunch of nerds. and it's funny because I was stressing out about this all season, and then finding out once the show came out and reading the interviews with the crew members, especially the higher ups, and going, they're all nerds. They're all fans. They have nothing to worry about.
Awesome, by the way. Like, yes. I think it makes all of us feel better knowing that the people behind the camera are just as big of fans of this stuff as we are. I mean, it makes us, feel safer and more confident that not only obviously are they professionals in what they're doing, but like they care about the content to that next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. So right before production started, when we were in pre-production, our lovely, lovely second AD or second AD, I forget which one, Christina Peterson, lovely KP, she showed Tom my Vogue Loki cosplay from 2012.
Which
and
is
I remember
incredible.
Going, you did what? Why would you do that? Oh, no. And I was freaking out like, oh, no. Oh, no. He's going to think I'm a fangirl. Oh, no. But what did he say? Don't tell me. But what did he say? Was it good? Oh, God. Why did you? But what did he say? apparently it went really well. That was
so cool, though.
Which was amusing then, where I thought, and I haven't told anybody outside of set and a couple of my friends this story.
Ooh,
I thought
this is an exclusive.
Yeah.
Yes, because it has a good ending.
Okay.
I thought that Tom didn't like me for about 3 to 4 months into production.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
And why?
Why? Well, let me tell you. He never at first, I'll belay any beating hearts that he didn't do anything bad. it was just, I don't know if it was a comedy of errors or he was just messing with me and didn't communicate that he was messing with me. I don't know. but originally when the show started, I was not Sophia Standen. I was just utility because I had super short copper red hair. And according to our lovely director of photography, I did not have the red chin to be Sophia Standen.
All right.
So we got a big laugh out of it when the pandemic rolled around and we came back and I was Sophia Standen. because I was the first choice, and there was some conflict, so that ended up all working out. I have so much respect for Autumn and her vision, But the chin is now always a joke to me.
which is funny because we knew you were doing stand-in work on Loki, but as you should, you didn't. I mean, you know, we'd had you on and you kind of, but you didn't give any indication. And as soon as Sophia came on for the first time, I was like, that's it. That's who she's standing in for.
Oh, yeah.
It was like not even a shadow of a doubt to me, the likeness between the two of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I my inbox blew up. Oh my God, Lady Loki, you were Lady Loki. Oh my God. I'm like, yes, the synchronicity of my life freaks me out sometimes.
I know I was one of those messages.
Yep. So yeah, we got a big laugh out of me being Sophia stand-in. And the I didn't know if Tom liked me or not thing started back pre-pandemic, because he would just glare at me. He would do the Loki glare. Mm. Which
is
I'm
this
like,
a thing he did like to other people, or you
not
just noticed
really.
That he was doing it to you?
He would mainly do it to me. I was assuming, I'm like, okay, he doesn't, that's fine. He doesn't know me. He's concentrating on his work. I'm not reading into it. It's fine. It's whatever. It's
sure.
You know, other people were like, no, he has resting bitch face. And I'm like, okay. And then we had one day where I did stand in for Sophia because her stand in was out that day. And they had to wig me up because, you know, copper red short pixie cut over mm-hmm. here. Although I love the irony that my hair kind of grew out to be Sylvie's hair.
Yeah.
From the pandemic. Yeah. And so they put the wig on me, and then at night when I had to go take it off, we would go to the makeup trailer and hair trailer to get it off. And I would do what you're supposed to do, which is, you know, knock, see if they're available, because first team, which would be the actors, the main cast, stand-ins are second team. Usually second team does not go into the hair and makeup trailer when first team is in there. They like to have a little bit of a separation. Both just professional respect. Also, usually stand-ins are vetted, but sometimes you might get one that gets a little nutty.
Sure.
So I was very surprised when, you know, I heard our hair and makeup lead, and they're like, oh, yeah, Brianna, come in. So I popped in, and there's Tom. So it's just them and Tom. So I'm like, my first instinct was to go back outside and be like, cool, I'll wait until first team is done. Yeah. It's the end of the day, and Tom's just glaring at me. And I'm not like, okay, it's the end of the day. I don't initiate. If he says hi to you or talks, then you can talk. But, you know, be cool. Don't be weird. As they tell all the stand-ins and extras, don't be weird. But, of course, I'm with Amy and Douglas, who are stylists. And you know how you get when you're in a stylist chair. So how you doing? How is your day? And I'm like, okay, they want me to be chatty. All right, hi. So I was trying not to be too chatty, but I chatted a little bit, and Tom just I don't know if he meant to glare, but he was glaring at me the whole time. And we were doing that awkward eye contact thing in the mirror where we just kind of kept looking at each other. And his brow just kept furrowing. God,
furrowing.
I can't talk. Yes, yeah. Thank you. More and more, and I'm like, oh. And his stylist is working on him and literally just talking to me about how the day went. We're pretty sure it was Tom didn't recognize me and was very confused how everybody else knew who I was.
Oh, okay.
That's our prevailing theory.
Okay.
Except then it kept going for like another 2 months or a month or so after, when we got back from lockdown, to where it became a running joke among the crew, even the other stand-ins. They had like a tally going. They're like, oh, so Tom said hi to us today. just being his normal Tom self. And like the minute he would see me, he would just glare. Or he would just walk by, and I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? And I was texting the AD department going, please, can someone for the love of God find out, like, have I upset Tom in some way? Or I'm just so confused. I don't know if anybody talked to him. I have no idea. But I remember one day when we were filming on the train, the Lamentous train. And it wasn't a particularly hard day, and us stand-ins really didn't do much. It was mainly me and Tom's stand-in, Marcus. And we were off in our little stand-in corner. We were very far away from everyone else in our little corner. So, and at the end of the day, Tom makes a beeline straight for Marcus and I. And the other stand-ins are like, oh, here comes Brianna. and I'm just like going down to my seat, just like, what is happening? But yeah, Tom actually was just like, hi, you guys did such a great job today. I'm so happy. And just and being what we now know as normal Tom. And we're just like, what just happened? And it was like the ice broke. And then he'd come over and he'd, not that I needed him to talk to me. It was just so weird because he would be happy with everyone else.
Sure.
And
sure.
then glare at me. other crew members think that he was messing with me in character, but I never got confirmation on that, so I have no idea. But we're good, we're fine. We then got to, you know, have talks of he would switch with his stand-in sometimes, and then we'd chit chat about the psychology of human eye contact and drama school and fun stuff. So
cool.
I can breathe now.
That would have been so, like, I would have been so anxious for the I can only imagine how stressful that was for you.
Yeah, no, and I was like, well, obviously I'm not going to ask him.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't want to make a big deal out of it.
Right.
But, like, it was vexing me. I was just like, oh my God, what have I done?
It's like I've never even spoken two words. What happened?
Yeah, I hadn't. There was no hello had even happened.
Right.
And Tom is super cheerful pretty much all the time. And says hi to everybody and is just like, what is going on? And one of the other theories was like, oh no, he might have finally figured out who you were, that you were the Vogue Loki he saw, and decided to mess with you in character. I'm like, baby.
Well, you were a variant.
Right.
Yeah.
This is
true.
Was. Yeah.
I feel like I got the seal of approval later on when we were talking and we had a Loki stare off. so I feel completely validated as a Loki variant that I could stand toe to toe with Tom for 30 seconds and do a stare off and just end up doing the same smirk.
That is a talent for sure.
Yes, it is a thing we Lokis possess.
And so, what was it like working with Sophia?
Now, on the opposite end, I unfortunately didn't get to talk to Sophia at all until Wrap.
Oh wow!
And I don't know if she was on the Shire side or just, you know, COVID was a really weird time for all of us and trying to figure out social distancing. And to the crew's credit, I didn't even know Sophia had a baby on set.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Baby wasn't on set. Baby was in her trailer.
Right.
But how I didn't know that, that news to me. But so I think there was a lot of distancing of, even though we were all COVID negative and we were tested all the time, you know, new environment. I don't know, some actors are super friendly and super like Richard E. Grant. Oh my God, he was so friendly. But like Owen Wilson was the same way. He didn't talk to the stand-ins pretty much at all. And that's pretty normal. It's fairly abnormal for actors to be super chatty with the stand-ins.
Sure.
So I don't fault Sophia at all, but we had a very lovely rap. We ended up writing each other little letters. I wrote her a letter and left it on her chair. And I came back from standing in and there was a card on my chair from her.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was super sweet. And so we got to chat for a little bit right at the end. And she's lovely. And I was sad I didn't get to know her a little bit better during the run of the show. But, you know, it's work. It is what it is.
And, sure. Yeah.
So unfortunately, I don't have Sophia stories. I have a lot of Tom stories, which I now realize that I probably got to work with Tom as closely as I did because Sophia was being near her baby.
Yeah. If she wasn't on set, she was probably in her trailer. So yeah.
Yeah. So that now makes sense. And I really wish someone had gotten some behind the scenes shots of when Tom would switch with his stand-in and set up a shot or do a rehearsal with me, because then the poor PAs are running to throw PPE on me. you know, Tom would be maskless sometimes. We had to keep getting him to put on his mask. Not for lack of rules, just he's so happy energy. I think he would just forget.
Sure. And he would just jump into it. And of course their concern is that he can't get sick. So they're like, oh, we're going to mask you.
Oh yeah. And we would always have our masks on unless camera specifically told us to take our mask off.
Right. Right.
But if you were, part of the rule was that if you were directly next to cast, you also needed to have a face shield.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And sometimes you would need, depending on when it was in the show, because they eventually got us all masks that were up to requirement. In the beginning, we only had the little disposable ones.
Yep.
Right. So sometimes I'd have like two masks and the shield and they'd be running to get it on me. And then I'd be sitting there. Tom would be in, you know, his full costume and maskless being Loki, doing his thing, and then I'd be sitting there in my, you know, hobo set clothes with multiple masks of shield being Sylvie. I imagined it looked quite funny.
So we've kind of alluded to it a little bit in case folks did not pick up on it. There was a story that you had posted on Instagram about an interaction between you and Tom that really went viral in many ways. A lot of different outlets picked up on it and they started recirculating it. And, you know, now you are the most world famous stand-in. Again, congratulations, question mark.
Right when I leave, it's probably a good thing. Oh, God.
But I don't
want a reputation of being thinking I'm all that in a bag of chips. I just posted that to my little quiet little corner of social media just to be like, oh, this is this lovely thing that happened. And I figured since I have a couple crew members that follow me that maybe they'd see it and they could show it to Tom just as a thank you, because I didn't get to thank him on the last day.
Sure.
Because I was also still a little nervous.
Yeah.
Like that picture, I was literally the last picture or the last, yeah, the last picture, the last person to ask. Because I was chickening out. So I was not expecting that to get picked up at all. I figured, oh, a few people might see this and they might think it's a nice story. And I hope somehow Tom can see it and just know that he's a wonderful person that really helped me out in that moment. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting, it was one of those things where I went to bed and woke up the next morning and my phone had exploded. And I was like, oh dear God, what is happening?
Something happened. So what was that story for folks who may not have caught it?
Yeah. Spoiler warning for folks that have not seen the show. Turn away now. There'll be Elias here. See what I did there? I'm sorry, that was a terrible joke. Anyways, so in episode 4, I believe, I lose track. It all runs together for me. When Loki and Sylvie storm into the Timekeeper's chamber and destroy the Timekeepers. On that day, for whatever reason, I have a brain injury from a car accident, very nasty brain injury that I have been recovering from. And I'm good for the most part, but every so often there can be days it randomly misfires, or it's like sludging through brain fog. And I was just having one of those days where my brain was having some processing issues. Was not dragged. And that particular scene was very complicated in terms of blocking. And we only saw it once, which that's normal. But I think usually I'm really good at being able to watch something once and be able to completely recreate it. Sure. That day I was not. And it was embarrassing. And it got to the point where Tom had to step in to show me what to do, because I was not hitting the right marks. I was not going to the right places or doing the right actions. and part of that was also because I didn't have the script, so I didn't know what was happening. I just knew, okay, they're moving here. And we were also below the stage when we were watching, so I didn't actually see where their feet landed. But either way, not to make excuses for myself, but just setting that scene. So I was just getting mounting frustration, because I would like to think I was good at my job. And to then have Tom have to step in to tell me what to do was just an extra layer of embarrassment, to where I could feel my chest was tightening, and that deep anxiety attack was welling, which then was only making me more anxious, where I'm like, oh, for the love of God, do not have a panic attack right now.
Sure.
This is not something that needs to happen. And this is not a reputation you need to have. You need to figure out how to quell this. And Tom's really, really, really great at giving direction and showing where to go. So he was not, making me feel anxious. It was just the situation.
Sure. You were just self-conscious.
Yeah. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Or two with a hyphen. and as he would do sometimes when we would, since we ended up doing multiple rehearsals together from different scenes, he would come up and go, well, you go here. And then I say this, da 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 da. He'd go through the lines and you go, and you go, da 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 da. And then we're going to go up here. And you stand right here. No, come up here. Okay, there. Cool. And now I do this, da 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 da. And he was doing that again in that scene until he got to the part where Sylvie and Loki have just, Sylvie's just cut off the head of the Timekeeper and it rolls to the ground. Mm-hmm. And then they're both standing there looking at each other. And he puts his hand on her shoulders. And what was interesting with that moment for me in the rehearsal was Tom had been doing his kind of speed through rehearsal of like, you go here and then I say this and then you go here. At that moment, he just completely went into character for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And just very slowly took me by the shoulders. And he just kind of, he did exactly what you see in the show, that kind of deep inhalation of breath that he has, where he's looking very affectionately at Sylvie and trying to both calm her from what is happening. And yeah, he did that to me. And that was what, and I know that he was just in the moment of that scene. I did find it interesting that of the entire scene, that was the moment he got into.
Sure.
And that stopped my panic attack.
That's awesome.
I was still embarrassed, but because I'm a very touch sensitive person and touch is my both my love language and my communication style, that one of the only things that'll calm me down from a panic attack is touch. And especially if it's mixed with someone's, at the risk of sounding hippy-dippy, energy. And Tom always has a great energy about him, but in that moment, he was specifically channeling Loki's energy to Sylvie, and that went into me.
Sure.
And that took me down from almost on the verge of tears. Like, I'm pretty sure I was actually tearing up right when he touched my shoulders, and then it stopped.
Especially, I mean, in the midst of the pandemic, when touch was few and far between, too, how unique
touch
that gesture was at the time.
I mean,
In a normal world, it seems more normal. When I read that, knowing probably how much they didn't want you. I mean, they wanted you masked up near Cast. They probably didn't want you touching Cast.
Probably not. I mean, we were taking every precaution and sanitizing and out the wazoo.
Yeah.
And the stand-ins, we actually had to follow the same COVID protocol as Cast, including, like, we had to come with different changes of clothes, and we had to do all the same requirements because we would be right near Cast.
Sure.
But the funny part with that scene and that incident is that we went through it again, and he sped through the whole thing, including the ending part, and he went to go touch my shoulders, and then it was almost like he snapped out of, or he didn't go into the moment that he did before, and he went to go touch my shoulders, and was just like, "Oh, may I? Do I have your permission?" And I just kind of laughed at him. I was like, "It's fine. You've already touched my shoulders." So that's partially what also led me to believe that I think maybe on a subconscious level, he picked up on
what
was going on with me,
because
Tom is extremely intuitive. I've watched him with other actors, both on set and from reading. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibilities that he did pick up on what I was going through, and needed that at that moment. I won't know for sure without hearing directly from Tom, but that's fine. It was what I needed at that moment.
And that's really awesome.
Sit down and watch him rip his pants on the screen. I don't think I've ever seen our costume designer run so fast.
So I have a question for you. And I'm not mansplaining this to you. I'm just kind of contextualizing for listeners. Is the series shot like a movie where things are shot out of order based on the economy of sets and actors and that kind of stuff? Or is it shot like a TV show where it is, for the most part, in order of the actual production?
With this one, as far as I could tell, not having sides.
Sure.
They shot it fairly chronologically.
Okay.
To my knowledge, that was the case. There might be some shots here or there.
Yeah.
That were changed, but it was definitely shot chronologically.
Cool. Did you happen to, with that said, this would have been right toward the end. And because it was just the three characters in really the final main set, did you have any interaction with Jonathan Majors? And is he as awesome as I think he is? Because holy crap.
He is so funny. My first interaction with Jonathan Majors was for him to tickle me.
All right. Oh, please elaborate.
So we're rehearsing the scene. We've watched them, and so we're in the elevator. And it was another one of those cases where he wanted to come in and kind of just do some of the rehearsal himself, with me and Marcus, Tom stand-in. And I don't know if it's shown in, I don't think I saw it. It's when they're in the, all three of them are in the elevator. And he does, it was in the script that he tickles Sylvie.
Really? Okay.
I didn't know that. I mean, I'm so good natured about it. I was just like, oh, hello. But I'm so glad that I have restraint and I didn't, you know, turn around and try to do anything back. Because I know better. But no, he was super fun, infectious energy. Like the energy that you saw in the show, he had the entire time on set. Awesome. I don't know if that's just, this is the first time I worked with Jonathan. I don't know if that's him in general or if he was just in character, but he was definitely having a blast.
It definitely seemed that, I mean, totally different, character than Lovecraft Country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so awesome to see him, give his version of Kang, which, you know, who in the comics sometimes does have these like manic episodes, mostly because he doesn't, he's still catching up to where and when he is. And I, mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of it. And depending on who's writing it, sometimes it's a little bit more or it's a little bit less. And I loved this portrayal of the character. I thought it was fantastic. So hopefully in understanding that he's going to be doing different versions of Kang, I'm hoping that there still is some consistency to some of that performance, because it really was awesome. And I was so excited to see him.
It was amazing to watch in person too. That's one of the really neat things about being a stand-in, especially if you're wanting to be an actor, of getting to watch these incredible professionals doing their job. And it's like a masterclass.
Oh, I'm sure.
Every day of getting to see the process they go to, like both Tom and Sophia, if they would deliver a line, sometimes they would then say the line 5-6 times in a row, but a different inflection every single time. There might be a different intonation on different syllables, or they would change facial features just very subtly. And it was so fascinating to watch. And then watching Jonathan Majors' decisions on the different lines that I'm sure if you just see in a script, most people would deliver it in a particular manner, and then watching him just blow that out of the water was really fun to watch.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I mean, there were certain ways that he performed those lines, which were just fantastic, that he would just like completely, he would change the cadence of how he was speaking and the tone of his voice. And it was, it like, I gravitated right toward that. It was a really incredible performance. And you know, with
like
him doing this,
just watching it.
Yeah. It, with him doing this manic, sometimes like almost clownish kind of thing with Loki and Sylvie, ironically, especially Loki being so serious and grounded, and, you know, the two of him, I mean, you know, given who and what Loki is, and then the two of them looking at him like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Like, it was such irony at the, I loved it. Oh my gosh.
That made me think of the, one of the fight scenes in, Kid Loki's palace, where Loki is around all of the other Lokis, President Loki, Boastful Loki, who does not get enough credit and representation.
Yeah,
he's
thank
awesome.
You. Yeah, any merchandise that I've seen has no Boastful Loki, and it
makes my
heart hurt. It really does.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna take this moment to talk about that for a second,
because
it's something that needs to be addressed, and I'm not sure why. I hope it's not race related. But I've noticed that with, and I get like Loki and Sylvie and Mobius are kind of, they're the main characters.
Right.
Totally get that. And who doesn't love Ala Loki or Gator Loki? We call them Ala Loki. Crocodile, Gator Loki, Alligator Loki. But, you know, there's other amazing characters in that. Like you have Kid Loki, Classic Loki, President Loki. Hi, there's another one there. There's boastful Loki that was just as present, and they leave him out in merchandising, in fan art that I've like cosplays, just fan responses I've seen. And a lot of that the same with Hunter B-15.
And her story is just such an important story in this whole thing. I mean, especially toward the end. I mean, it all kind of culminates and builds. Like early on, seemingly she's just another one of these TVA people, but her story just kind of snowballs and snowballs. And you realize, like in the last couple of episodes, like, holy crap, like this is an impactful character. She's going through her own thing. She's just not, she's not this like jerk cop that, you know, dragged Loki in and you know, enforcing whatever rules. Like, no, there's there's so much more that happens to her.
And like, I'd seen like the Funko Pops that they released, and they had one for President Loki. He was only in it for a short period of time, and Boastful Loki was in it for so much longer. He has so many more lines, but he doesn't get a Funko Pop. And I'm like, I don't understand the reasoning why. I've seen, I think I saw Loungefly backpack with literally all the other Lokis and no Boastful Loki on it. Like they were all on it together and no Boastful Loki. And I was like, but he is also a Loki and is super important. I don't understand. And nobody is there. Like, I've seen like people commenting on it on Twitter, but nobody's actually like addressed why.
I also had, so we've got Boastful Loki, Hunter B-15. Then there's Sasha's character. I forget, the Hunter C something. And also, who I haven't seen much of in merchandising or much of anything is Renslayer.
I've only seen one Funko Pop of Renslayer, and that's it. Just the one Funko
Pop. At least there's and that's one. All I've seen of it.
And seemingly, she's also going to have an extended story, whether it is in season two of Loki or she appears elsewhere. I mean, she clearly, like, she vacated, and so there's a lot more to come from her. And, you know, there's obviously some comparisons to the comic book character, and is she going to be a villain? Is she going to be a hero? Is she going to be somewhere in between? You know, there's all these questions, and, you know, so, yeah, obviously she's going to be a perpetuating character, at least for a period of time. So, I mean, hopefully we're going to see more of her, not just on screen, but also in some of the, you know, products and merchandising and all that.
I imagine that some of it has to do with, at least thinking from a business perspective, that, you know, because President Loki was Tom, and they're going to go with the things that'll sell the most. And I get that. But representation is extremely important. And I know it was extremely important to the crew. So I've been sad to see that.
And they really brought us a lot of representation in these pivotal characters. Unfortunately, we didn't have so much of that basically in the main three characters. You're right. I mean, it's, you know, like for President Loki, it not only was it Tom, but also probably every trailer that was out there had the President Loki shot in it.
Like, I mean, I know that was because that was a major line of comic.
So, you know, I mean, that was another thing that they pushed really big. But yeah, you know, I think there's some missed opportunities. You know, hopefully we do see more. I think it's really important.
I agree. So I just wanted to say that piece on there that we see you. We see you.
And we really appreciate Boastful Loki. I'm now on a thing where I'm like, if I find anything with Boastful Loki, I'm like, you know what? I need it. Like it needs to happen now so that
you need to share it. And it's, you know, like I was really happy I got to talk with Wumi a little bit because Lovecraft Country was airing while we were shooting Loki.
Oh.
Okay. And of course I was like, I'm not going to ask for any spoilers. I don't want to, I was so invested in Lovecraft Country, but I was so happy I got to tell her that. And I was like, my roommates and I at the time were just on the edge of our seats every week. And yeah. just her performance in that was amazing. And then being able to see her in person and watch her give a different kind of performance on Loki.
Totally.
Yeah. And then finding, and then, you know, Jonathan Majors later on, it was super yeah. fun.
That's cool. That's cool. I we do want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything else that you want to,
this is what I'm doing tonight.
Are there any other anecdotes that you want to throw out there for us? Or Sheba, John, do you guys have any questions you want to bombard Brianna with? Or what
so
do you got?
I do have one. And Brianna, it was after the, I believe, the first episode. And I'd actually caught it and then saw your post on it where... in the credits, they listed the stand-ins. And I think the only reason I noticed it was because I saw your name, and it's not something, and I think I was just waiting to see if there was a mid or post-credit teaser somewhere. Is that not normal for you all to get listed in credits? And if it's not, how significant was it, you know, for kind of this show and listing you all there?
To my knowledge, I mean, I haven't paid too much attention. Usually in TV shows, from what I've experienced, stand-ins don't really get mentioned. Movies they do, but it's like far back. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
And it's usually when they're scrolling through the credits at like Mach 80 that no human eye can actually read.
Yeah, exactly. So it was crazy to see cast, stunts, and us. I was like, whoa.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So cool. That was special. I now want to go watch other things that I've been in to then see if that credit is in the same place that I'm just seeing things. But I had never noticed it before, and I've looked for my name in credits before, so I thought it was significant.
Hey, it is.
I like is. To ask this question to literally everybody about work-related things. I guess it's like a teacher thing in me. But when did you, or how did you come up about wanting to become a stand-in? Like, you know, was it something that when you were a kid, you were like, this is what I want to do? Or you just kind of fell into it, or someone inspired you? Like, how did you come across that?
I fell into it. I was doing extra work and crew work. I was mainly in the art department. I was a storyboard and concept artist. And I was also doing extra work because there just wasn't enough storyboard work. The pay was super nice when it would happen, but it might be, you know, once a month, once every 2 or 3 months. So I like needed something in between. And my serving job wasn't going real well. So I was like, extra work was pretty consistent. And so I was registered with Central Casting in Georgia. Shout out to Central Casting. Hi, Alyssa. They do both. And so a lot of the castings that they'll throw up on Facebook will be for both extras and stand-ins. I'm not sure how much they do that now because their database is so large. I got in with them when they had just started in Atlanta. And so they didn't have a lot of taller women on the books. Mm-hmm. And I had stood in one time when I got pulled from a crowd on, I was working on Hidden Figures. Oh, I was, one of the, yeah, great movie. Mm-hmm. I was just one of the NASA women, one of the computers. And I happened to be near the height of one of the actresses. So they like pulled me for a minute to stand in for her. And then I went back. But my first stand-in job was I had a friend that saw the casting call for a stand-in for Sandrine Holt on MacGyver and was like, you should apply. And I'm like, but I'm not, she's a little bit taller than me. She's Asian American. I don't look like her. So I wasn't going to apply, but he convinced me to. And I was lucky because again, at that time they just didn't have enough people. Mm-hmm. And so I got hired to be her stand-in, and that was the start of it. And it just kept going.
Cool.
It's amazing.
So, and I'm hoping it's okay that I ask this / mention this because you've kind of been public about this, on social media. You're fundamentally done with the business, right? Like you're not interested in going back into it, or at least not right now. You've left the Atlanta area, which kind of makes things a little bit difficult to do some of the work. You're moving on to other things, huh?
Yes. It's a loaded thing. So I did move on to a different thing. I went and married my own Loki.
Which your husband he's a spitting image for Tom. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, the production messaged me while we were dating. It was like, so how tall is your boyfriend and is he available?
No kidding. Oh, that's funny.
Not kidding.
Wow.
So they knew. In fact, I got a lovely message from Sophia because they came back in February to do some reshoots, and they were wondering where I was. And they're like, "She just got married." I literally moved from Atlanta to Pennsylvania to move here and marry my husband the day after we wrapped on Loki because I'm insane. It was just the way things worked out. Loki was always kind of going to be my last project since we started. Because as much as I absolutely loved being a stand-in, it's not sustainable for expenses, especially if you want to be an actor. You can really get stuck being a stand-in. And I would waffle back and forth at the time, like, do I want to be an actress? Do I not? And then the pandemic happened.
Right.
Which a lot of people took a very hard look at themselves. And I loved set, and I didn't want to leave it. Set is my happy place. It's my happy drug. The happiest times of my life were on set. But I also needed a change because I was stuck.
Sure.
I've been in the industry for 13 years, and then I've been doing stand-in work since 2016? I forget. Whenever MacGyver season one was. And so I knew that I needed a change of some kind. I didn't realize how much of a change I needed. The universe told me that real fast.
Sure.
And so now I am here, and it's sad on the one hand because I don't have the adventures that I used to have. And I'm not in the industry that I love anymore. And there are days I miss it terribly. But on the flip side, I also needed to heal. I have a lot of physical issues. From the car accident and from previous things. Because unfortunately, the dark side of the film industry is it's a very, very unhealthy industry.
Sure.
People get sick a lot. People get injured a lot. And as great as it was for my mental health, it was not great for my physical health. So I'm in the process of healing. So the door is not shut forever on the film industry because life is weird and you never know where it's going to go.
That's true.
So I may go back. I may not. I have no idea. But for now, that chapter is closed.
Yeah.
And now I'm in the chapter of being happily married to my own Loki and us being variants of each other. Anybody who's met us, they're like, dear God, they're the same person. And now I understand why multiple people in production were like, oh my God, you and Taylor are Loki and Sylvie. You have no idea. There were certain scenes where I would hear what was happening and I'd text my husband and I'd be like, oh my God, you won't believe what they just said. You literally said this to me yesterday. Like the scene on the train when Loki is getting drunk and singing and Sylvie's just sitting there like, oh my God, that's me and my husband. That scene completely from the raucous start to adorable finish. With fight scenes, of course, because we are both martial artists. So yeah, I moved to get married, and I am a student now at the Keystone Academy of Dueling and Swordsmanship. So I spend a lot of my time wielding swords and various weapons of historical significance. Cool. So I still get to have adventure, just not in front of the camera.
So when we were talking to Sarah yesterday, she mentioned that basically, stunt folks, they don't have any agents or anything. It's a lot of it is kind of word of mouth, build your reputation, and you get a call. Once in a while, you're like responding to something. Is that how it generally is in the stand-in business? Like, I mean, you guys aren't SAG or anything, right? Because you don't have speaking roles.
Not in Atlanta. They are in LA.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm a little bitter about that. Only because I could have had health insurance by now.
Sure.
But I also realized that not being union in Atlanta also afforded me certain opportunities that I think I would not have had otherwise. Like in previous shows, I got to do a lot of off camera lines to the actors, which is not a thing, apparently, that stand-ins get to do. Apparently a lot of my experiences, were very unique, both to Atlanta and to me. they do happen, but they're supposed to pay a lot more because that then puts you into, SAG lines. There were definitely abuses that happened in Atlanta because it was a right to work state. But it also, so I didn't get paid for those things that I did, that if I were in LA, I absolutely would have been SAG. Mm-hmm. But I probably wouldn't have gotten to do the things that I got to do. So
it gave you opportunities, which otherwise would have probably been restricted.
Yeah. It's definitely gotten me called a liar at some points, or getting too big for my britches that I'm trying to hype things up like, oh, I'm all that and a bag of chips. Like I said earlier, I think I've said that 3 times this podcast. Jeez. I'm just hungry. but no, I'm not, I'm just me. I'm a professional goofball. I didn't realize that some of the opportunities I had were not standard. But as far as getting work as a stand-in, it's half of what Sarah said and half not. A lot of times you are in a database like Central Casting. So they pull extras and stand-ins from the same database. They get a production that comes in, they get a list of who the actors are, and then they go through, okay, who do we have that's around 5'7", 5'8", and blonde hair, blue eyes, and yada yada. And then they'll pull those. But your reputation is everything.
Sure. I'm sure their database has a little check mark line in there that like, this is a good person, this is not a good person.
I'm sure there is.
Which, to be completely honest, it's something that I understand and that John understands in the work that we do. We tend to bring on a lot of like independent contractors for larger projects. And sometimes there are people that don't work for us more than once because they were a pain in the ass. They simply weren't as good as we expected them to be. So they get redlined and we don't bring them on again. And then there's other people who are kind of like our go-to people because we know that they're really, really good.
The same thing happens in this case. And especially because you're working potentially directly with the actors. So they need people that are professional, that know what they're doing, who are going to be respectful and not be weird. And personally, I think being a stand-in is a really easy job. I guess partially because it comes naturally to me, my weird little skill sets of being able to, I can watch someone and then immediately mimic how they walk. Mm-hmm. Like I could watch you and totally tell you how you walk. that was my stupid human trick that I would do at lunchtime sometimes for the crew. The gifted, they're really bored. But it's also very, very much, can we put this person around A-list actors?
Like, yeah.
Can they handle themselves? Are they going to become a pile of girly goo around Tom Hiddleston, or can they behave themselves?
Right.
I would have become a pile of girly goo. That's...
Tom almost got me. For like 1 second during the Loki stare off, and then my Loki brain just took over, and I was like, all right, we're doing this. I got you.
Nice. Well, Brianna, I guess we'll kind of wrap this up here. But I mean, like I said, we've had you on before, which was far too long ago. Really appreciate you coming on now. And hopefully we'll have you. If you'd like to come back, we would love to have you on in the future. Because you guesting with us is not contingent upon you being a stand-in. We're not that snobbish. You're just awesome and fun to have on, and you're a nerd just like the rest of us. Who enjoys these things?
I've got 13 years of stories.
Well, yeah, and that too. Once in a while, I'm sure that there are times that you would just break into some miscellaneous story on something, which is great. So, we would definitely love to love to have you back on the show sometime. I'll
agree.
You know, harass you on social media about that, as I do. So, where can people find you so people can like stalk you and stuff? Like, be nice, people. Don't like really stalk. Don't be weird. But you know,
yeah, don't be weird. Number one rule of the industry: don't be weird.
Yeah, don't be weird.
But I am the Lady Nerd. So anywhere that you see the Lady Nerd, that'll be me. I haven't seen any copycats of me in a few years, so should be good. I have not yet gone onto the Twitter sphere. The Twitter sphere scares me.
I've been there for years Instagram. And it still scares me.
Yeah, it was just one social media too many. But I'm on Instagram, Facebook, like public Facebook, Pinterest.
Same.
YouTube, although I'd be like, oh God, not YouTube. I forgot some of my very old embarrassing videos are up on there. But I just haven't had the care to actually delete them yet. But yeah, mainly Facebook and Instagram.
Well, you know, and I gotta say, your Instagram is pretty darn good. It's mostly tea, swords, and Loki.
I mean,
that's like, and cats. That's like 95% of the stuff. So,
yeah,
and these are all things that I like.
Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff.
My feed. I've been doing less and less on my feed, and I'm very story based. I'm hoping to have more photography. Once I'm healed up, since I'm still in a cast from spraining my ankle sword fighting, or excuse me, specifically Bowie knife and tomahawk fighting on uneven terrain.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that from different people. It seems such a common injury when people are with a Bowie knife and a tomahawk. It's crazy. Brianna, thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on.
It's a pleasure.
The stuff you're telling us from the set is just really awesome. Lots of fun, and it's great to hear that the things that you experienced there, that even though we didn't necessarily get to see them on the screen, seems to be like just as fun as what we did experience. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. Everybody from the actors to, of course, I can't believe I haven't talked about our lovely director, Kate. So I just have to give lovely Kate Heron a shout out. She's so much fun. And
I'm bummed she's not going to do the second season.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really sad to hear that. But you know what? I'm not going to be standing in for Sophia. I'm very sad. Someone else will have my shoes, and I want to throw my shoe at them, even though I'm sure they're a lovely person.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I'm sure they will be. I'm sure they will. All right. Thank you so much, Brianna. We appreciate having you on. Take care.